folks, if you're thinking about interviewing anytime soon, now is the time to start preparing. Interviewing is not about smarts. It's not about personality. It's all about preparation in the modern age as more and more companies use more and more tools to separate the wheat from the chaff. Our interviewing series is over 50 podcasts that go through in detail every step of the interview, how to prepare, how to dress, resumes, cover letters, how to chit-chat, how to answer tell me about yourself and your leadership style and significant accomplishments with repeated examples, how to close, how to ask questions, how to follow up, everything in enormous detail because we know interviewing for most people is a black box. Come and check it out. Welcome to Career Tools. Our guidance on questions not to ask in an interview this week about working conditions. Here we go. Wendy, in our interviewing series, we talk about questions that we recommend, the type of questions, how to structure them, how to preface them, how to study for them. On the other hand, we also talk a little bit about some questions to avoid. And we've discovered that the interviewing series does so well that we wanted to spread our guidance a little bit more broadly here because the average advice on interviewing is horrible. Stories are horrible about what happens to candidates when they ask questions. You know, we're always amazed that there are 23-year-olds with blogs saying, this is what you should do.
Yeah.
And by the way, this person's self-employed. Well, okay, how many interviews have they had? Have they ever interviewed anybody? Have they ever sat around a table with people who have to make decisions on interviewing?
Yeah, so if you have the interview series, this will just make it more comprehensive. And if you don't have it, this will help you avoid some of the pitfalls, but you probably need the rest of it in order to understand the whole suite.
And you can go to manager-tools.com and buy it.
Yes.
What is it, 65 podcasts, 30 or 40 hours worth of guidance associated written materials for $150?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. What's our outline? What are things we're not going to ask about?
We're not going to ask about hours, location, technology, or conditions.
I hear that list and I immediately say, well, of course not. And then there are people listening right now going, uh-oh.
Yeah.
So let's start with hours.
The problem with these questions around these kind of conditions is not so much the question. It's the impression that they give.
Yes.
And if the first question you ask is, how many hours am I going to work? Then the company represented by the hiring managers just assumes that your focus is on what you need. And the idea of an interview is not that it's about what you need, it's about what the company needs.
Yeah. And so here's what's interesting about that. I can understand the rationale, and here's why. In a first part of an interview, if Wendy's interviewing Mark, when Mark is being interviewed by Wendy, Wendy gets to ask the questions, and it's about things Wendy needs. So it is logical, misguided, wrong, for someone to then say, aha, this is my turn to ask questions. I'm going to ask about things I need. Okay. Unfortunately, the transition that you're hoped to have based on who's asking the questions is not the right transition to consider. The right transition to consider is the two parts, what I like to call, there are two parts of job searching, getting offers and then taking offers. If you don't have an offer yet, then you haven't told them what they need to know in order to offer you a job. Meaning, therefore, any time that elapses during that time where you're not talking to them about what they need in order for them to make the decision, you're wasting your time. And what's worse, if you're talking about a wrong thing, a selfish thing, when you ask questions about things like this, you're A, not telling them about why you might be good or smart or useful, and B, telling them that I'm every bit as important as you. And that is true once the offer is made. It is not true before the offer is made. And to spend time asking questions around issues that are important to you is, again, to take away time from telling them why you deserve an offer. So the transition is not when questioning shifts. The transition is when power shifts. And power shifts from the company to the candidate when the candidate gets an offer.
Yeah. So in that preliminary stages, especially in first interviews, but really all the way through the interview process until you get the offer, the company or the hiring managers who represent the company only want to know, will you fit? And how little can I pay for you? So in that sense, it's exactly like getting copier paper. It's like, will you fit in the machine? And how much do I have to pay? Because I want to pay less. And that's kind of a harsh example. It's, you know, it makes you sound not
perhaps
like human beings.
Overly simplified, but yeah. Useful.
Although I worked with procurement on getting in contractors, and that's literally what they were like. They were like, oh, you want this skill? That's how much it costs. And that's the only thing you can have. Like, they wouldn't listen to, well, this guy's got really good experience and this, and he's a little bit more expensive, but it will work out better. No, it's against the rules.
Yeah.
Hiring managers will treat you like human beings, of course, but so many people think that they have something special, that their experience is special, or they're an especially good worker, or they are especially bright or especially fast or whatever. And the answer is, like many things, that most of us are average, because we have to be. Not everybody, like 90% of people believe that they're good drivers, like the maths, even my poor maths, that doesn't work out.
Yeah. And all the kids are above average.
Yeah. It doesn't work out. So you're not special, especially in the beginning stages. And so it is all about what the company wants. And so what you're trying to do is prove that you will fit and that you will do it for the money that they want to pay.
Okay. So our first guidance is don't ask about hours, right?
Yeah, a lot of people want to ask about hours because they want to know how much they're going to be working, right? That is a big indicator or a big factor in whether or not people are happy at work, is how many hours they end up working. But the problem with asking is that you get an answer which is an answer, but it's not terribly accurate. If you think about it, the hiring manager, if you say, how many hours am I going to work? The hiring manager thinks back to the guy he's already got in the role and he says, well, he works about 45 hours a week, so I'll say that. But you don't necessarily work as fast as that person. You don't have a lot of the skills that that person has in terms of relationships and working within the company. You don't know that the job might change, people might change, and that might affect things. Processes might change, that'll affect things. And so really all you're getting is a guess. And if you're getting a guess, you might as well get nothing.
Yeah. What's more is the two things I've told people for years, never to believe when someone else talks to you about it, unless you have hard data, which no one ever does, is salary and hours worked. There's actually a couple of well-regarded human resources surveys which show that anyone who claims to work more than, I think, 55 hours a week, or it may be higher than that, actually works less than 50. And the people who say they work 70 hours a week, notwithstanding the New York Times recent review of Amazon's employment and hours worked factors, 70 hours a week, guys, is 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, no days off ever, which is ludicrous. And even if you're working, you know, 15 hours a day, that means you, whenever you leave the house, you get to work at 6 a.m., and you leave the office at 9 p.m. And it's just not true. The point being, asking does two harmful things. It makes it about you, which is bad, which, of course, Wendy, reminds me of God's Wheel, right?
Yes.
The great Shel Silverstein poem, which I'll quote in a moment. But I probably need to send him royalties as many times as I've quoted it. And it also gets you data that won't help you. Okay, it won't. You don't know whether or not this company manager said, when he says, because you probably don't know him well, we work pretty long hours around here. You don't know that for 16 years, he was a government employee and he never worked more than 37.5 hours a week. And now he's up to 45, which is 8 more hours a week. It feels like a whole workday, and that's a lot. Whereas another guy you would ask and say, that's actually pretty reasonable. But because he used to work at a startup, 45 hours or 50 hours a week is no big deal. And frankly, most people don't think about the number of hours that non-exempt employees work, right? If you're an hourly employee, you work those hours. And if you don't, If you work more than that, you get paid overtime. And if you work less than that, you don't get paid. If you're a salaried employee, they don't really care. And what that means is they don't have a way to catch it. What that means is they don't know. What that means is any answer you get is not going to be accurate.
Mm-hmm.
We know you want to ask. It's okay to ask afterwards, but I wouldn't, and I never have. And as I like to tell people, our guidance goes under the rubric of, this is what we tell our friends, okay? We're not hiding anything. We're not holding anything back. We want you to be effective, okay? I would never ask. If I went to work at a place and I had an idea that it was going to be a place that focused on performance but also allowed me to have a sustainable life at home, and then I discovered that it was bizarrely different than that, 20 more hours a week, I would just start a new job search. And I would catch myself, I would find myself embarrassed privately and think to myself, okay, I missed it. What did I miss? What were the clues? And so on. Good lesson. Good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. And this was bad judgment, and I learned a lesson. Yeah. So don't ask about hours. Or if you're desiring hours as a key factor, take an hourly job. That's the answer. Or go to work at a place where, and that's the vast majority of places in the world, where you don't have to work that hard. But guys, I used to tell people as friends, I mean, you can be lazy if you want. And you can be picky too. Really being, you know, saying, no, I prefer this versus that. You can't be lazy and picky both. Okay? You can want to worry about your hours. And you may want money. You can't be picky about how many hours you work and expect to make a lot of money. Your call. And your values are yours. It's great. Isn't freedom wonderful? So be careful.
Yeah.
Next, location.
Location. Right? It's again, like one of those things you can ask the question, but you'll not get a good answer. So other people have said to me in the past, I really want to ask about location because last time I took a job and I didn't ask about location and they put me in the broom cupboard or I was at the back of the office or I had to sit next to the boss. And
or will I be in the downtown office or will I be in one of the satellites? Will I have a reverse commute?
Will I have an office? Will I not have an office? You know, yeah. All these things. And again, nothing stays the same. They can say to you, yes, the intention is to put you in this chair and show you the chair. And between you accepting the offer and starting, that can change. Companies move people around all the time. Yahoo started by allowing everybody to work from home. And then they made everyone come into the office when Marissa Mayer started. And there's this constant rebalancing of requirements and cost. And this constant rebalancing of how much space people need. If you look at the statistics, the space that people get in offices has reduced consistently. Well, if you've only got a laptop and a screen now, you don't really need that much space, as much space as we used to when we, you know, had those big CRT monitors and stuff. So smaller companies outgrow their space and big companies move you around because they want to improve their profits.
Yeah. You may want to know exactly where you're going to sit, but it won't matter. And frankly, while that makes a difference, the key here, folks, is you may ask that question after you get an offer, not before. Now you're in control. If you want to turn on a job because you need a reverse commute after 2 hours, we have a client in LA that some people drive for 2 hours into work every day and then turn around and drive that back home. And it pains me to think that we're taking advantage of that by them listening to our podcast. And I wish they didn't have that commute. And if that cut back on their podcast listings, that would be still okay with me. But if that's important to you, that's fine. But it's not important to ask before you have an offer. And by the way, companies, you mentioned about moving offices. They're pretty careful about that. Mm-hmm. Real estate deals mean that offices, they're buying up land secretly through law firms and real estate law firms. And this is completely normal. I think there's a story, I've always assumed it's apocryphal, but perhaps not, which was that Disney tried to buy up all the property in Central Florida around Orlando, and somebody finally got wind of it and extracted an exorbitant price for their land because they knew their land was critical to Disney's overall land acquisition strategy. So Disney doesn't want that, right? And so they're going to be careful. Are they going to tell everybody, hey, we're moving out to Orlando? No, they're probably not. Yeah. And so the guy you ask, again, probably doesn't know. Or when he says, we've been here for 2 years and the company's growing, you're going to say, ooh, company's growing. That's bad. No, actually, that's good in terms of a lot of things. But again, your boss may not know, just like ours.
Yeah. And layoffs and all sorts of restructuring. Now, yep. I've sat in HR and heard all of those things happening and gone out and sat in interviews and heard the hiring manager say, yep, we're set. Nothing's going to happen in the next 6 months. And I knew full well it was. But the company hadn't deemed it the right time to tell him. So I didn't say anything.
Good. All right. Next, technology.
Oh, here we go. We're going to make the college students really sad now because they've all got like super fast Macs and really nice wireless printers and all the modern conveniences. And when you actually get to a company, they never give you the latest anything, not the latest hardware, not the latest software. When I left my last job, I still had a 8-pound laptop.
Yeah, a boat anchor.
Right. Yeah, it was like 4 inches thick and made me bend over. You can lobby for new machines. You can tell people it'll make me faster, it'll make me more efficient. But a lot of the time, you're just one voice out of all the ones in the company.
Look, if you're a young person and you want the latest technology, first of all, again, if you don't have an offer, you come across by asking about the kind of technology you're going to use. It's a bit like asking about the kind of clothes you can wear and so on. You come across as a fetishist, somebody to whom things and your proximity to them will be important to them. Now you say to yourself, wait, no, I'm trying to get slight efficiency gains and so on. Folks, the kind of efficiency gains anyone can get from using any readily available technology are so small as to be grossly outweighed by the inefficiency of being a human being in an office. I've heard from people for years say, oh, telecommuting is so much more effective. No, guys, it's not. The data on this say, oh, I don't have to commute. Yes, you're right. And I've known hundreds of people who say, I take advantage of not having to commute by figuring out when I used to go into the office and I get more stuff done at home. And then I show up to work when I would at the office. I'm in less meetings. Okay, and the meetings you're in are on Skype and people forget to include you or there's a bad connection and so you're not contributing to the meeting, which is essentially a productivity problem. And you're doing laundry. And why would Verizon say, if you're telecommuting, we expect you to have your webcam on all day, and thousands of people quit because they didn't want their bosses to know what they were doing. The idea that technology is that important to you sends a message about your values, which is probably inconsistent with a larger organization, which has more complex things to worry about, including provisioning and securitizing and paying for and keeping track of and updating all that technology. Furthermore, BYOD, bring your own device, didn't exist 5 years ago. We're recording this in 2015. It certainly exists now. And be thankful for that. Because it used to be, you have a cell phone. Sorry, you can't do any company business on that. You have to do it on the BlackBerry. Or on another phone that we give you. And yeah, we'll pay for this phone, but you have to pay for your own.
Yeah.
And you might think, oh, well, that's horrible. Okay, fine. But large organizations are not as nimble as small organizations. They trade security, safety, cash in the bank, ability to get lines of credit, sustainability for nimbleness, quickness, creativity, and so on. And that's what you're doing. The bigger the company you go to, the less likely you are to have what you want. And again, to ask for it is to make yourself seem small.
I used to work with people who were working on top secret stuff, and they used to say that their technology was an extra step behind because the technology has to be tested and they have to be absolutely sure that a nuclear submarine isn't going to, you know, do something bad because the technology is new and they hadn't properly tested it.
Yep.
So if you're going to work in that industry, be prepared to have a dinosaur on your desk. Small companies don't have the resources to give you new things. So it's not just big companies.
You're right. Good. Okay. Conditions, right?
Yeah.
It's the, we're talking about day-to-day stuff, minor inconveniences. No coffee in the building, no fridge in the building, a printer that's unreliable. You know, in some cases, paying your own expenses. You're, you know, will you please drive your own car across town and pick up the printing for tomorrow's meeting? Mm-hmm. Yeah, those things may be of interest to you. They may send you a message about expenses or about the company or about its status. Those are all reasonable things to wonder about. I would also offer, we haven't said it yet thus far, there are reasonable things that companies wonder about that they don't ask you about. Same thing in reverse. Wendy and I often joke about the fact, because she's British and I'm American, in America, the ability to talk politics is there. Generally, you're not supposed to, there are some things you're not supposed to talk about, and politics is one of them, because you may create some conflict, and it's generally not polite. But those standards have degraded in the last number of years, and so political conversations, even though they can be rancorous at times, are within the bounds of reason, perhaps not in the workplace. Not so in Britain at all. It's fairly black and white, right, Wendy?
Yeah. Politics, money, and religion.
You just don't talk about these things, okay? And you have that. There are things you wouldn't want people asking you about, and the same thing is true in reverse for companies. And we're just offering you those things that you need to stay away from. And I will tell you, I spent my first 5 years as a professional were in the Army, where the conditions were abhorrent, because that was my mission. And I wouldn't trade that for the world. But we do get people asking, you know, what about this? Or where are the snacks?
Yeah. I once worked with someone who liked to have a morning walk about 10:30 and just go out of the building and walk around it a couple of times and come back in. And surprisingly, his manager was not impressed.
Yeah. I got to tell you, if I talked to a person who said, Mark, I'm really excited. I've got some questions, though. It's one of my life things, and I like to have a morning walk about 10:30. I get up, I meditate, come to work, I'm focused, I'm intense, and then I get a little bit wound, and I need a 20-minute walk every morning between 10:25 and 10:35. And I would look at the person and be completely respectful and say, you know, you seem very comfortable in your skin. You seem like you just have a natural calm about you. I respect that. And I'm going to tell you right now, this is not the place to come to work. I can make no guarantees for you regarding 10:30. You may be busy, swamped from 10 to noon, and that time will go by in 2 minutes. And there'll be other days where your 10:30 walk will be completely appropriate. And frankly, as I'm sitting here, it doesn't excite me to think you're going to be productive, except for the time when you don't want to be productive. Of course, we understand that people have to go to the bathroom and so on and eat lunch and so on. We totally respect you on that. We're not going to give you limits on that. On the other hand, if that's important to you, then we're not the company for you. I think you're great, and we're not the place for you. I could just see a person coming back and say, whoa, no, I didn't mean to go that far. No. Of course.
Yes, you did.
And what he wants is to continue the conversation. And I'd say, I'll be happy to continue the conversation. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, pretty big reason to say no. Again, because you're putting yourself first.
And you think you're a special snowflake. And the hiring manager knows they have 10 people to choose from. And the other 9 don't want to walk at 10:30 and to be away from the desk and all that stuff.
Yeah. And if you really want coffee and the company doesn't have coffee, I mean, I don't know if people know this or not, but a lot of people bring lunch pails to work, and they have thermoses with coffee in them.
Yep.
Okay? So, in that sense, there are all kinds of solutions to those problems. You have a limited number of questions you get to ask. Don't ask about things that bother you, or don't ask about things that you could work around. Ask about the things that really make a difference to your effectiveness on the job until you get the offer. Once you get the offer, then you can ask a bunch of those questions. And a lot of those subtleties could make a difference in where you go to work. And that's okay. Right? I mean,
yeah, I think you've maybe got 2-3 of those questions. And if you keep going, it starts to become about you again, even once you've got the offer. So you really need to prioritize.
Right. You need to prioritize. But that said, let's not leave them with the impression that if I ask 5 or 6 questions, because it's really gotten down to nitty gritty for me, if I ask 5 or 6 questions about conditions or tech or something, a company's not going to rescind the offer. That said, there's a difference between an offer being rescinded and you taking some goodwill off the table before you start. It happens quite frequently.
Thank you for clarifying that. That's what I meant, and I didn't say it.
Yeah. So, okay, summarize for us.
We talked about not asking questions about hours, location, technology, and conditions, because the object of the interview is for the hiring manager to say no. And if you're spending time in an interview talking about those things, you're not spending time telling them how awesome you are so that you can get the offer. And as you said, once the offer comes to you, then you have the power and then you can ask those questions. But until then, you're just wasting time and giving the wrong impression about yourself.
Yeah, offers can be rescinded because mm-hmm. of the lack of political awareness. It's rare, guys. But more importantly, it's rare that an offer gets rescinded because that offer, if there was doubt, never got offered to begin with.
Exactly.
So you can't rescind something. You don't have to take back that mistake.
Yeah. And hiring managers are cautious enough that they won't make an offer if they've got those doubts.
Those of you who have been listening to us for 10 years have heard me say this before, but I'll say it again. When I first read this poem by Shel Silverstein, I thought, wow, it's so good. I want to write like that, where it's only like 50 words and it communicates a billion. And it's called God's Wheel. And it says, God says to me with a kind of smile, hey, how would you like to be God a while and steer the world? Okay, says I, I'll give it a try. Where do I sit? How much do I get? What time is lunch? When can I quit? Give me back that wheel, says God. I don't think you're quite ready yet. Right? It's not about you. You want to join an organization? It's about making the organization successful. It's the organization's job to help you be successful, but don't ask about that until it's time to do so. And before you have an offer, is not the time to do so. Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Hopefully this is actionable and specific and helps you in your next interview. See you next week.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.